This episode of Gettys Breakdown is brought to you by MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie and sign up at MyBookie.ag and use promo code Gettys, and they will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Bet with MyBookie.
Gettys Breakdown, the Gettys Fan Podcast. Because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown Podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SCC. And I'll be flying solo for this recap of Florida, Kentucky. And was it pretty? Was not pretty. But before we get into it, remember you can find Gators Breakdown on news4jax.com/Gators Breakdown. There you'll find all the Gators Breakdown episodes, as well as articles from the News for Jax sports team. That's news4jax.com/Gators Breakdown. Also, listen on iTunes, Google Play, YouTube if you want the video version, or joining us live. When using those services, please share, rate, and review the show. Let Gator Nation know what they're getting with Gators Breakdown. Hey, look, and on social media, follow Gators Breakdown on Twitter and Facebook at Gators Breakdown. So, of course, Florida's 31-game winning streak against Kentucky is over. The Wildcats finally beat Florida 27-16. And look, guys, it had to happen sometime, but it still doesn't make the loss any less disappointing. All the hope of progress on the offensive side of the ball after the Charleston Southern game is wiped away just a week later. But no one could have seen the performance that we saw from the defense. You know, there was a clear path for Kentucky to win this game, and that was to come here, be able to run the ball on offense. And they came into the swamp and dominated the trenches on both sides of the ball and just ran the ball down Florida's throat. Florida couldn't get into a groove on offense, you know, couldn't consistently get playmakers the ball. No clear hierarchy of wide receivers or running backs. Franks was inconsistent after a pretty good first half. It just wasn't clean whatsoever versus Kentucky. So, look, you know, first and foremost, before I kind of get into the game, this team and program is further behind than I think we wanted to believe. Now, we have harped on this podcast plenty of times how recruiting has dropped off under Jim McElwain, and it did at his tenure for Florida before Dan Mullen took over. And that's definitely showing, but also just how the program was under Jim McElwain. The culture is much different now, and it looks like it's going to take some time for it to come around. I'm a firm believer in first-year head coaches having some up and downs, no matter the situation. Look, Mullen was hired because there was a problem. It was not going right. If everything was good, there'd be no coaching change to begin with. So, you know, that type of performance that we saw against Kentucky is still an even further indictment on Jim McElwain, more so than it'll ever be about Dan Mullen. That's not to say it couldn't have been better versus Kentucky and what the coaching staff did, but it's still more, of the program that was left behind and everything that must be fixed before Florida takes that next step into being one of the nation's best teams here. And look, I'll have Cole Kubik from the SEC Network on later this week. He's been around the program for the last 2 weeks with the SEC Network. I know he said some things last week on SEC Network Radio of how just some of the simple things the guys didn't know from the previous regime. So Mullen had to kind of start even further behind than even he thought he would have to. Of course, we know about the story with Nick Savage was going to stay at Mississippi State until he saw all the work that needed to be done at Florida and came early. So, you know, we'll have Cole Kubik on later this week. He's been around the team, saw this butt whooping that Kentucky put on Florida up close. And, you know, he'll be able to share his thoughts on the state of the program, you know, the transition from McElwain to Mullen and 2 games in to the Mullen era. So that would be good. That'd be the midweek episode. So that'd be Wednesday night that we'll have Cole Kubik on. Tomorrow night, it'd be Will Miles and I discussing this game even further. You can check Will's article out on readingreaction.com. He does a pretty good breakdown so far of the Florida-Kentucky game. So I'll go back to kind of the keys that I wanted to see going into this Kentucky game and figure out, of course, if they happened, if they didn't happen, and maybe, you know, some things why. I'll get into some tweets as well that you guys sent for your reaction of Florida and Kentucky here. So, you know, what I wanted to see was Frank's looking comfortable within the offense again in a tempo similar to what we saw. Accuracy, like we saw last week, well, you know, that same tempo wasn't there from week one. Frank's played well in the first half, 7-12 for 105 yards. Had to escape some pressure and did well enough with his legs to pick up some yardage, but it all unraveled in the second half. Hey, look, like I said, started 7-12 for 105 yards in the first half, but then follow that up going 4-13 in the third quarter for 42 yards and then 6-13 for 85 yards and a touchdown in the fourth quarter to finish 17-38 for a career high, 232 yards and two touchdowns. Hey, look, Florida is not going to win many games if Felipe Franks is throwing the ball 38 times. That is not a Dan Mullen offense necessarily. Look, we know he caters to the talent, supposed to be catering to the talent, but sorry. You know, Franks is not the type of quarterback you're going to go out there and win when he's throwing the ball 38 times. That's not a formula for a Florida win. That's asking Franks just to do too much, put too much on his shoulders. It's not going to happen. There are too many times where Florida didn't play the numbers. In the box, could have ran the ball against five or six defenders in the box at times, but passes were made instead. For the most part, I thought Franks did okay, given how many times he was asked to throw the ball and the offensive line issues and the lack of running the ball in the game plan. But, you know, there were still too many telegraph throws. There was, of course, the interception, a couple more drop passes that should have been interceptions that Franks just really has to see. It's weird to kind of see the lack of running the ball in the game plan and letting Franks throw that many times. It's just not a good scenario and not what we kind of – I mean, look, maybe we looked at this team the wrong way. Maybe we put too much on the run game. Maybe, with the offensive line issues, there's not a lot of confidence in it, but there's still you may have seen me tweet this stat out earlier, but through the first two games, and yes, the sample size is small, I get it, but it still shouldn't be the case where Franks is the leading rusher on the team with 78 net yards. Felipe Franks, through two games, is the leading rusher on the team. And look, guys, I mean, Damian Pierce, the second, was 75. He didn't even get a touch versus Kentucky. And look, Franks isn't Tebow or Prescott. And I know he's taken down some throws and run with it, and that goes toward the rushing yardage, but in no way, shape, or form should Felipe Franks be the leading rusher on the team right now? You know, get the balls to the running backs, specifically P. Ryan, Pierce, Davis, more so than Jordan Scarlett. I haven't seen it from Jordan Scarlett so far this year through two games. Through these two games, average yards per carry is right now LaMichael P. Ryan with 10.3 yards a carry. 10.3 yards a carry. He's averaging a first down every time he touches the ball. Damian Pierce, like I said, no carry versus Kentucky, so you guys still have to go back to last week. Average 8.3 versus Charleston Southern. Malik Davis got some more carries. He's been averaging 5.3 yards in these two games. Jordan Scarlett, 3.8. They're playing with the same offensive line, guys. So it's Jordan Scarlett, I think if he had a better offensive line, he would be a better running back. I think he's the type of running back that needs more help from the offensive line. But it looks like P. Ryan, Pierce, Davis have kind of shown enough wiggle and ability to use their acceleration not too long after getting the handoff and being able to help this offensive line a little bit. So they're all playing with the same offensive line, and there's a clear pecking order as far as what it looks like on the field right now for me. So these running backs need more carries, and for someone to try and get into a groove, there's too much rotation going on, and I didn't think we'd see that. I thought Mullen would pick a guy and go with it. But, I think what the first three drives were first the three different running backs in the first three drives. It was like they kind of just have a formula going in that, they want to keep these guys fresh. But I think they need to get into a groove more than they need to be fresh in the fourth quarter. So I'd like to see one or two guys early and often and then go with the hot hand. But it all starts up front. And my second key going into this game was the offensive line asserting themselves, and that didn't happen, as we know. And I'm sure that has played into the play calling a little bit, as I said earlier, them relying on the pass more than the run. But the numbers are there in the run game with matchups, so maybe we're just overlooking it. Maybe there is just no confidence in this offensive line from the staff to actually push or open some running lanes. But here we go again. With this offensive line, it's likely not going to get much better. You don't all of a sudden flip a switch, become tougher, and play with a different mentality I know we're all hoping the coaching staff and the strength and conditioning would light a fire in these guys, but it's the same issues we've seen for a few seasons now. I mean, we saw the signs and the lack of run blocking last week versus Charleston Southern, and it's reared its head again. I mean, I hate to bring up the Georgia program here in this, but, you know, looking for a silver lining here, they even admitted that it took a full year for their new strength and conditioning to really see the results. And you know, you go back to Kirby's first year, it was a struggle. Last year, it looked like a completely different team, especially along their offensive line. They were having the same issues year after year after year along that offensive line. For year one under Kirby Smart, still having those same issues. But it took year two, that full year under strength and conditioning, for it to all come around. So maybe that's kind of what we're looking at right here. So, it may take a while to see some results. So maybe we're just taking all this newness that was going on, and it was, you know, blinding us to the same issues that this offensive line has had time after time after time. So Mullen said after the loss, quote, "We have to be more physical up front on the offensive line. I think our physicality is going to be something this team, and we've talked about it constantly, they have to continue to work on." So, this is one of those things that isn't necessarily on this new staff. This lackadaisical, nonchalant attitude that's plagued this team, and specifically the offensive line, is only going to get better once the new blood is inserted. Hey, look, Spurrier even said it in the telecast, and we've harped on it a good bit. It's going to take top five recruiting classes to turn this thing around, and that really starts on the offensive line. You know, for this program, and it has been addressed this cycle and must continue to be addressed until it's just going to take time, because I don't think the mentality is there right now. So new blood is going to have to be inserted at some point. But look, we still got this year to play. That's further down the road. You know, so what can be done to help the offensive line this year is something the coaches are going to have to figure out. You know, maybe Hagee can continue to get more playing time and they can shuffle the pieces a little bit. But it's the same starting five we've seen throughout fall camp, and something needs to happen to try and help them out and whatever they can do to help themselves out. But for the most part, the scary thing is these guys are pretty much what they are, and it's what we've seen for a few seasons now on the offensive line. So the ugly one, the really ugly one. The last key I have for this game, if you listened to the episode this past week, was to hold the Kentucky run game to around or less 150 yards rushing. Well, I was way off on that one. And another, you know, example of lack of physicality in the trenches as Kentucky's front completely owned the Florida defensive front for the tune of 303 yards rushing on 41 carries, 303 yards. That's pretty much double what I thought would be necessary for the Gators to hold them under and come out on top of this game. Benny Snell led the way with 27 carries for 178 yards. As quarterback Terry Wilson also added 107 yards on 10 carries. Kentucky ran for 7.4 yards rush. So issues that were coming out around fall camp was that this defense was having trouble setting the edge. And that was definitely showing up. You know, time and time again, the Kentucky run game found ways to get outside, even if the defense found a way to get into the backfield. The Gators missed tackle after tackle after tackle after tackle. Those two issues led to Kentucky owning the ground game, not setting the edge, not being able to tackle. The Gators finished the game with only three tackles for loss and no sacks. No sacks. And some of that wasn't the game plan. You know, they were going to try to sit back and not let Wilson, you know, run all over him and contain him, but they lost contain way too many times. And if you're going to play that style, you have to be successful at it. If you're not successful at it, then that's when you're going to get ate up. And that's exactly what happened, you know, with this Florida team against Kentucky. It was not good. It was not pretty. Hey, look, the tailgating was fun. Atmosphere was fun. I think the fans were pretty ready. But, it's that was ugly on both sides of the ball. And like I said, it's a culture thing. First and foremost, I think it's going to be it's going to take some time. And this program's a little bit further behind than we all thought. And we'll get some more thoughts, as I said. Cole Kubik will join me later this week. And like I said, he's been around the program. He's seen it. And we'll get his thoughts there. And Will Miles and me tomorrow will get thoughts there as well. So, hey, look, NFL started. So, you know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice, and usually it's what team to bet on this week. And the truth is, I don't know who's going to win, but if you think you know, you got to check out my bookie. And with NFL season starting, everybody's ready to get those betting dollars in there. So remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. And that's why I tell people to bet with my bookie. Trust me, guys, they're your best bet this season. They've been in business for years, have great reviews, and an easy-to-use mobile site. So lay down some cash and win big today. Hey, look, guys, I'd only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I urge you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. MyBookie has in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join MyBookie now, and they will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use promo code GATORS to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie, MyBookie.ag. And don't forget to use the promo code GATORS when creating your account to claim the bonus. MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. And also, if you want some Gators Breakdown gear, head to squadlocker.com, search Gators Breakdown, Gators Breakdown, Nike merchandise, other companies out there too. To get Gators Breakdown merchandise, hats, shirts, polos, t-shirts, all that good stuff. You can support Gators Breakdown that way, and in supporting or getting some merchandise out there with the Gators Breakdown logo on it. So another thing I wanted to bring up here was wow, the missed field goal by Evan McPherson. Hey, that was a terrible missed call by the refs. Of course, not the reason the Gators lost the game. Don't get me wrong. But still changed their strategy late in game. First off, the field goal looked good to the eye in the stadium and on the replays. If counted, the score would have been 21-13. And then if it plays out the same way, you know, the Gators score a touchdown, had to go for two. Franks never saw a wide open Malik Davis. So at that point, the score would have been 21-19. So when Florida got the ball back late, hey, only a field goal would have been needed. But it's all under the water, all under the bridge, as it really doesn't matter. But that's an inexcusable missed call by the refs. That cannot happen missing points, missing clear points that would have that should have been scored there. As far as the Gators kicking a field goal, but that was, I mean, of course the stadium knew it, everybody knew it. Especially when it was shown, that was kind of I don't know how to describe that. It's just when points are taken, I mean, you know, not literally off the board, but in a way, that's inexcusable. More bad news as far as the game goes. Last night, Marco Wilson tears his ACL after having no injuries, guys. In game one, one of Florida's best players goes down. On the first defensive drive of the game. So Marco Wilson went down with an injury and ends up being a torn ACL. Second time he's torn an ACL, as he had the same injury his junior year in high school. So go Trey Dean takes over the spot now, opposite of C.J. Henderson. And, hey, look, Marco Wilson and C.J. Henderson was the best tandem, one of the best tandems there. He's going to have to see. It's going to drop off a little bit. I do like Dean, by the way. I think he'll fill it in admirably, but you can't replace Marco Wilson there. So you know, it'll be a little bit of a drop off, but we know that first and foremost, his defense has got to worry about tackling more, and they got to worry about defending the passes and all that stuff, except for the safeties. They gave up some big plays. We'll talk more about that with Will Miles tomorrow as he broke down these plays a good bit and can kind of tell us what happened there. But to Trey Dean, of course, takes over opposite C.J. Henderson. And after that, it's Brian Edwards as Christopher McWilliams is out with an injury. So young defense now is young and inexperienced, especially back there in that secondary. So there's going to be a time, of course, when teams are going to, you know, start testing that. You know, Missouri later on in the season is kind of the team you're going to pick out there. But Georgia's offense, LSU's offense, you know, can be multifaceted. But it's going to be that Missouri team that's going to be passed first and foremost. And, you know, we'll see. You know, Florida will kind of be experienced at that point. Cannot afford any more injuries going back there in that secondary. there. Other news, Darius Lemons announced he is going to transfer. And hey, look, kind of weird. He tweeted that out pretty fast after the game. And we heard rumblings all throughout the summer that it may be a possibility that that happens. And hey, look, I mean, Florida got him in to school there, and he's done well since there in the classroom and kind of being, a guy who's really taken to the school part of life there. So, look, he just wants some more playing time, more than likely. And what we were describing earlier with how deep Florida is, you know, he was returning kicks, but that's about the extent of it. He didn't get a carry either against Kentucky. So he announced on Twitter, "I would like to announce that I am transferring from the University of Florida. I'm going to miss some of the boys I've been playing with for the past 2 years I've been here. I feel I've learned a lot from the previous coaches that were here. I want to find a school I can help to my best ability and actually use my talent that God has blessed me with. Thank you. Farewell." So, of course, nothing official from the university or anything, but we'll see. You know, maybe change of mind or something once he talks to the coaches or whatever. But Darius Lemons looks to be transferring from the University of Florida. If you want to go by what he is saying there from his mouth. So, of course, guys, I did ask you to send me your tweets and your thoughts of the game. Of course, you know, Gators Breakdown prides itself on being a fan podcast. So definitely want to get your thoughts out there of what you thought. And, of course, you know, Bill and I, Bill Sykes, right up here on Gators Breakdown as well. We went to the game together. I know we had a couple periscopes, one before the game, one after the game. You could get a lot of our thoughts there. We got a lot of your thoughts there on that periscope. I'm going to put it right here, podcast form for you fans out there. If I'll get to all of them, I'll get to a pretty good bit. But I'll start with Dylan Cogdill. He goes, "We had zero relentless effort from both lines. Tackling and over-pursuing are still big problems that carry over from last year. Best example being the Terry Wilson keeper for a touchdown. Overall, just really disappointed." Look, there's probably the one word, and I use it in the intro. Disappointed, especially after last week, and you know, a lot of fans were starting to believe. I was starting to believe there as well, and just seeing, yes, we keep going back. Yes, we know it was Charleston Southern, but we had seen some things that we just haven't seen. It didn't matter who the opponent was. And then Florida just come out and fell flat on their face against their first SEC opponent, both, you know, lines of scrimmage really getting on there. But just really disappointed in the performance there. And, hey, look, you know, I have to turn right around, get ready for a Colorado State team that upset Arkansas and their first-year head coach there too. So, I mean, Colorado State's going to come in after looking pretty terrible their first two games, going to have a little bit of confidence after beating one SEC team with a new head coach, seeing if they can make it 2 weeks in a row where they can do that. Christopher Yans, Mr. Chris Bitts, says, "I think we may need to lower expectations, not just for this season, but another 2 to 3 years. This is a full rebuild. Mullen has to process out MAC guys and get players who fit his system and buy into the program's vision." You know, yeah, kind of what I spoke on earlier as far as expectations go. You know, that is something a lot of people asked last night. You know, what now do we see for this team moving forward? Look, guys, there's only two games on the schedule right now. I'd still say Colorado State next week's, you know, should be a win. Idaho should be a win. Those are the only two should wins on the schedule right now. Every other game, 50-50 at best. If you want to go just the way last night looked, look, we didn't want to overreact from week one. Try not to overreact from this as well. But when you've seen the same issues that you've seen for years, that's where, you know, the expectations kind of get lowered again. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. You know, is Florida a 6-win team? Are they a 7-win team? Are they still an 8-9-win team? I mean, if they're still 8-9-win teams and we can't see any performance like we did last night again, you know, so to some people now, this is looking like a 6-7-win team, and they're seeing the rebuild that takes place. And look, we've spoken on the talent plenty of times. They have talent in certain areas, but not as an overall team. The linebacker core still lacking. It's a young and inexperienced secondary. The offensive line just still can't come around. Quarterback plays inconsistent. So those things are going to hold back what talent Florida does have. It's going to be held back. And that was one of my worries. Yes, we talk up this wide receiver core, and we've talked up this wide receiver core, no matter who the coach was the last few years, and they're still held back somewhat by the quarterback position. So that we'll see. Yes, there's talent, but it's got to come together, and that's the problem right now, is it all can't just sit there and come together. So Jeff Funk sat there 15 rows up from the sideline, and it was clear as day. Franks is not our guy. The physical attributes are there. However, one interception was directly to the DB. Should have been two others as another hit the DB square in the hands. Short passes were fastballs. Accuracy, no. That's what I'm saying. Franks wasn't the same. Like, he started off good first half there. I think started getting jitters in the second half once the offensive line just kept giving up time after time again. And Franks either having to escape the pocket, run, or get hit. So I think in order for Franks to be a serviceable, good quarterback, the offensive line is going to have to help him. There's no other way around it. He can't shoulder it. So, that's with most quarterbacks. But I really think for Felipe Franks, this pocket's going to have to stay clean. Now, Gator Bodine. Don't blame the refs. Yes, our D-line was held almost every play. Yes, the field goal was a bad call, but if you leave it up to the refs, it's your own fault. Blow them out like you should, and it's not an issue. Number two, it's going to be a long year. Number three, criticism needs to be constructive. And for the most part, I think I have seen most fans out there are level-headed in this. Some realizing the gap in talent. Some realizing what the last staff put this team under and where they're starting from in Mullen taking over. So I do think a lot of the criticism now is being pretty constructive, and a lot of realization is happening as well. Robert Guagliardo, both lines got abused. Tackling was terrible. Mullen did not keep the pace offensively. Still saw better play from Franks compared to last year, but old Frank showed some too. Got to keep offensive balance. Yeah, good points there, Robert. The pace was another thing. It was a slower pace than what we saw last week. They were running the ball more. They were running the ball earlier in the game, but not throughout the game as much as I wanted to. So that did slow down the pace a little early. And then there were a couple times, and hey, look, I know a lot of those magical cramps from Kentucky when Florida wanted to speed it up. But hey, guys, we were laughing when Virginia Tech was doing it to FSU. So I think we got to kind of, if it happens to us too, we can't laugh about it because of our rivals, but then I'll get so mad when teams do it to us. So it's part of the game now. Honestly, it really is. It's sad to see. I don't like it, but it is what it is. There. And like Robert said, yeah, you got good Franks, you got bad Franks. We just need more consistent quarterback play going there. Kevin H. 1983, Flip Taylor and Ivy get Heggie in at left guard and McCoy at center. Jordan at right guard for Johnson. P. Ryan and Davis are more suited for this offense, so they need to pass Scarlett. Missing your three best defenders is tough. Need CC and Reese back. Jackson over Miller in Houston is confusing. You want to get into a lot of player talk there. Like I said, we'll get into that with Will Miles tomorrow too. These Sunday shows are just kind of going to be a more overall reaction type. You'll get two shows from me in 2 days. So we'll definitely get more into specifics there. But to speaking on this, a lot of people are asking, can you start flipping guys on the offensive line? Can you take Ivy to left guard? And one thing is he's gonna have to want to, or if you get the Heggie in, some people also bring it up. Kevin said flip Taylor and Ivy, so maybe Ivy plays right tackle, Taylor plays left tackle. I don't know how much they've trained cross trained there in camp. Heggie coming back healthy is going to be a big part whenever that help comes when he can get on the field more consistently up in that first team. You brought up the running backs, and I agree. It's P. Ryan Davis, Pierce. If they want to play him and give him some more carries as well, but three backs is definitely kind of pushing it, and especially the way they're rotating it right now, it's just way too much, for my opinion, as I mentioned earlier. Brian Ferris, 27-29. Defense cannot tackle. Period. It's just as bad as it was last year. Franks once again doesn't hit wide open receivers. Offensive line is horrible. Young backfield just got younger with Wilson now out for the season. Florida was out coached, period, last night. Yeah, I mean, that's not I don't want to make it sound like I'm giving Mullen a pass for last night. Like I said, it's more of an indictment on McElwain than Mullen, but there were some bad coaching decisions. As we were saying, not giving the ball to the running backs enough. The pace wasn't there. I'm sure there's some trust issues with this offensive line and getting plays in fast enough. Maybe trusting Felipe Franks as well. A lot of things we just won't know. We kind of see from far away. So I don't really know. Yes, it looks bad. There are some bad plays being called, of course, for sure. But for reasons why we may not know. Now let me get a drink here. All right. And Jonah Boer, my reaction is we need to run the ball, take it out of Frank's hands. Plus, I'm more upset about losing Wilson in the grand scheme of things. That is way bigger. Yep, like I said, you know, take the ball out of the hands of Franks because, like I said, you're not going to win throwing the ball 38, 39 times with Felipe Franks. This is not a good formula for winning. John Welsh, O-line is a mess, and maybe Ivy needs to move back to guard. Defense needs to work on fundamental tackling. We miss tackles all over the place tonight. Bull Gator, I don't know. That's that mid M readout. I don't know if we will even make a bowl game. I went from 9-3 to 6 or 7 wins in my head over one game. Yes, that's all it takes for me to see, unlike those fans out west. Okay. Little shot at FSU there at the same time. But yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, expectations have kind of changed a little bit. Most 8-9 wins going into the season, even after last week against Charleston Southern, and now 6 or 7 is kind of creeping into a lot of fans' minds out there. Jay Hester says offensive line, defensive line are big concerns. Linebacker and cornerback depth are big concerns. Franks is who we thought he is. Team has to play better around him for this to work. Agree there. Multi-year project from Mullen. That definitely looks like to be the case. Preston Fuller, I'm glad the talk of the streak is over. It was bound to happen at some point. However, we looked terrible in the trenches on both sides. Did we get hoodwinked with the strength and conditioning hype again? Like I said, the strength and conditioning is going to take time. I expect a little bit of results just because of not getting so much last year. But give it a full year. Yes, the guys look different, but there's a mentality there too that that comes along with that. And I'm not sure we're going to get that this year. So a couple more here. Be great at Roe Dixon. We are terrible. We are soft as Charmin in the trenches. Still don't know how to get playmakers the ball. Yeah, that's a good point. Darius Toney should have had the ball a whole lot more, who really seemed to be the only guy who could consistently make something happen besides P. Ryan, who didn't get a lot of carries, or Davis, who should have got more carries as well. He says, even Spurrier said in last night's game, we need top 5 recruiting classes, which aren't coming anytime soon. So, part of it, too. Spurrier's comment made Will and Bill very happy there. So, we'll get Will's thoughts on that on the next episode. HWY Highway 20 Gator says, not much to react to. We once again felt and will continue to feel the effects of Muschamp and McElwain's recruiting for years. Our program is in need of complete rebuild in every position group. Our defense is already depleted going into week 3. 5-win season. Oy. Christopher Coots, it's simple for me. Mullen inherited good talent, but offensive line is still a big issue. It will take him some time, but fully confident that he will get UF in the right direction. Zach Grader, Frank should not be throwing the ball 38 times, whether we are winning or losing. Agree. Aaron Hodges, tackling, ineffective offensive line play. Safety play was terrible. Bad performance all around. Mike Henry, seemed like once we got behind, we pressed. Definitely agree there. There was that one drive where we threw to the sideline with 3 plays in a row, forced the ball. Nobody was open. Cornerbacks were draped all over receivers. Not draped as in pass interference, but just right there. Not any room whatsoever. Franks was going to force him throwing the ball in those spots anyway. Defensively with the players, offensively play calling and offensive line play has to improve, especially the left side. So, guys, thanks for sending. Okay, 2 more, and I'll be done here. That's it. Good question here from Dawson Sparks. And how do you think we rebound after this? As a loyal Gator fan, I can't help but be timid on getting excited anymore. I do believe in the long-term development, But I mean, do we just honestly not have the athletes at this time? Overall, no, Florida doesn't have the athletes at this time. Now, Florida does have the athletes not to get road graded by Kentucky. So that's where the issue is. That's where the problem is. You know, if you go by recruiting rankings, which is what we do a lot here, they matter. Stars matter. But there comes a point to where, you know, development matters as well. And it's not happening right now. So a team like Kentucky comes in. Hey, a coach who's looking to end the streak, a coach who's been at his program. He's installed his system. I didn't believe in their quarterback play. They shut me up. I didn't believe that Benny Snell would run crazy. They shut me up there too. There are athletes there. The athletes good enough? Are they experienced enough? It's a combination of things like that. And the thing is, you know, how do you think we rebound after this? That's the magical question there. You know, I said last week after the great showing versus Charleston Southern is, you know, this would be the first time in a while that the Gators have been talked about in a positive light. And we heard it all week and the Vegas spread come out and Florida's two touchdown favorites. And Franks was going to hear a lot about how well he played and the team's going to hear about how well they played. And look, we saw what happened. It didn't really amount to anything. Dan Mullen said practice was great last week. So, you know, not nothing there, you know, they didn't, I guess, I'm sure they know about the offensive line, defensive line issues, but, still he said a great week of practice going into the game. So, but he says they got to practice harder, go at it harder this week. And of course, so, how does Florida rebound after this? I don't know. You can't get the woe is me attitude that they got last year. And a lot of that was the McElwain effect, last year as well. But you know, the whole, you can't go feeling sorry for yourself. And you know, I think you go bounce back. You got a team you should handle pretty well in Colorado State. You need to do that. And then, hey, look, you got to get ready for this road game. Florida on the road scares me to death right now. What we're seeing in the trenches. And I don't care if it's Tennessee and I don't care. They got blown out by West Virginia, week one. Florida don't have that offense and Florida's going to Rocky Top and Jeremy Pruitt's going to be looking for, probably emptying the kitchen sink to get his first big signature win in his career. So, look, I know we got two more weeks for that game, but you know, right now, looking at it 2 weeks away, you know, these trenches for the Gators scare me going up there to Knoxville. What we've seen so far is everything's been at home, and even in the trenches at home against Kentucky, it didn't look good. Didn't look good at all. So as far as how Florida rebounds, I wish I could answer that, but I have no idea. I have no idea where they're at mentally after what happened last year and then the way the game against Kentucky went down. Last one here, K.O. Brady. Man, this is so disappointing or perhaps sobering. I thought Florida may be good and this could be fun, but this is a gut punch. Team isn't very good. So, you know, differing opinions there, mostly most of the part of, you know, disappointed, expectations getting lowered, but hopefully, you know, guys, this will still be fun. I said going into the season, there are going to be some ups and downs with the brand new head coach. It's going to happen. There's probably a game you shouldn't lose. Hopefully this is it. And there's probably games you win that you probably shouldn't win. And it happens a lot with first-year head coaches. So hopefully, you know, that big upset's still out there. And Florida can, I don't want to necessarily say tread water the rest of the season, but you know, get there a respectable, fun level of playing. And then go from there. And hey, look, and the way it looks right now, you got to go beat FSU at the end of the year. So there's still a lot to play for, especially with the season finale there, because of you know, FSU's not looking too good. FSU's not looking too good either. So around the SEC, before we sign off here on this episode of Gators Breakdown, Mississippi State went to Manhattan, Kansas, and beat Kansas State 31-0. So Dan Mullen's former team gets a big win on the road. There, I tell you what, one team that's surprising me a little bit, two blowouts in a row. You know, don't get me wrong, I know it's not the toughest opponents in the world, but Vanderbilt doesn't put up points like this a whole lot, and very often. 41-10 over Nevada. The game of the SEC opponents, you know, as far as game of the week, SEC versus SEC. It's Georgia, South Carolina, and the Dogs are not slowing down whatsoever. 41-17 of a game that a lot of people wanted to pick the upset. But if Georgia gets picked off, I don't think it's going to be a game people are picking. It's going to be a game where they just get kind of surprised by it. And I don't even want to pick that right now because I don't see anybody beating Georgia right now. in the East. So maybe LSU or something like that, but not the way I see it right now. 41-17 Georgia over South Carolina. Alabama 57-7 over Arkansas State. Ole Miss was a little scare for a little while, but they ended up winning, beating Southern Illinois 76-41. 76 points. Ooh, man, crazy. Tennessee over East Tennessee State 59-3. That's the Gators' opponent in 2 weeks, of course. And look, Texas A&M, Jimbo Fisher, year one there, played Clemson really, really, really tough. Have a chance to win that game late there. But Clemson wins 28-26, escaping Kyle Field there and Jimbo Fisher's big game debut as Texas A&M head coach. So, you know, good showing by those guys there. LSU 31-0 over Southeast Louisiana. Missouri 40-13 over Wyoming. And then I mentioned Florida's opponent next week, Colorado State upset Arkansas 34-27. That game was at Colorado State. So Arkansas had to travel on the road to Colorado State. So I don't know who put that together, but that's what happened. But like, as I said, that's Florida's next opponent. Didn't look too good the first couple weeks of the season by getting blown out by, I believe it was Hawaii week one, Colorado week two, and they rebound nicely and get an upset win over Arkansas. And then, of course, 63-9, Auburn over Alabama State. And then, of course, to wrap it up, Kentucky ends the streak at 31 games and beats Florida 27-16 in the Swamp. So, yep, Gators return home for the Swamp against Colorado State next week. And, man, that crowd's probably not going to be too pretty there. But hopefully, you know, fans and we'll go support the team and players there. But, as I said, we'll be back tomorrow here on Gators Breakdown, Will Miles and I. Breaking down the game even more, some things Will saw, you know, as we watched the game, charted some plays, what's happened at the safety position, the defensive back position, what's Felipe Franks been looking at, what's he's looking for on a lot of these certain plays, the numbers advantage in the box. You know, we know Mullen likes to play numbers a lot, get the number advantage, didn't do it versus Kentucky for whatever reason with some of the play calls there. Sometimes they should have passed. When they should have passed, they ran. And vice versa, the other way around. So, you know, we'll see what Will will have to tell us. As I said, you can go readandreaction.com, check out Will's article there, and we'll get more insight on that tomorrow on the next episode of Gators Breakdown. So, thanks for joining me here. Talk about this disappointing defeat for Kentucky beating Florida, but Gators, hopefully better stuff's on the way. We can get some better things to talk about. Hopefully coming up later this season, starting with Colorado State this week. So I'm David Waters, your host of Gators Breakdown. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.